Good morning. I guess we say welcome to Elizabethtown.
There we go.
This time last Friday, we probably would have been someplace else. What a snow. We'll call the meeting to order, and the first order of business is to welcome Dr. Evelyn Ellis, the Regional Chancellor of WKU Elizabethtown / Fort Knox. Good morning.
Good morning to you, President Ransdell, Regents, invited guests, and visitors. We are thrilled to have you here at Elizabethtown Fort Knox. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to the Board of Regents for making this facility possible. It was a number of years ago that you agreed to lease some property over to Hardin County Schools, with the understanding that we would have a partnership that has just absolutely blossomed in the leadership of Annette Johnson, and in conjunction with our work that we do with Thelma White, we're extremely proud of. I'd also like to thank our illustrious president. As you know, Gary Ransdell is a man of his word, and as soon as we have the key and open this facility, I started pounding him about why he needed to hold a Board of Regents meeting on this campus. And last year he had hoped to do it and something came up and we couldn't make it happen. And every time he saw me running across, I know, we're coming over the So I want to say thank you for that. On behalf of all of our students, our faculty, our staff, our community members, we thank you for coming to Elizabethtown. It is very, very much appreciated. And I hope that as you plan out your future meetings, that somehow or another, for the benefit of our regional campuses, of which we are one of the four locations of Western Kentucky University, there is a possibility that the meetings can be rotated. And so I will see you in a few years if that's possible. But for today, I just want you to know that this building was built at approximately $14.4 million. Has made it possible for us to increase the offerings that we give to the students who were already attending our institution and for students who have since decided to join us on this campus. And has also made it possible for us to partner with students who will be coming in the future with all that we do with Dan Robinson's outstanding staff in this building. You may have noticed that we do have a facility downstairs. We do have three IBS classrooms, two of which have already been fully equipped. One we're hoping that before long we'll have it finished, but this facility has made a huge impact on what we do. So without further ado, I don't want to just keep talking. I want you to see what happens at regional campus.
The role of a regional campus for WKU is twofold. It's to provide access to higher education for those students who otherwise would not be able to access higher education, and to improve the quality of life in the communities that we serve.
Our first responsibility is to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and therefore our regional campuses become very important to doing our responsibilities to drive the economy and improve the quality of life for Kentucky. Our regional campuses are an important way in which we reach the citizens of Kentucky. So they are really subsets of what we're about as a university and the means through which our responsibility to Kentucky is fulfilled.
Part of the real benefit of having a regional campus is that it's a part of the community and it can focus on the specific needs of the community in which it's located.
So many of our students are place-bound students, which means they have commitments in the community. They have family commitments. Many of our students are working full-time. They're trying to complete their higher education.
I think regional campuses really fill a void for some of our WKU students. The regional campuses play an important role in helping those students navigate their personal and professional lives, and they can gain that WKU experience in a non-intrusive way for a lot of them. I think the regional campuses play a very important role in overall WKU enrollment. In any given year, we have between 3,000 and 4,000 students that are learning on our regional campuses who otherwise may not have.
first and foremost role of regional campuses is access. Folks go to regional campuses because it meets their needs. It's a way of making the university there for people who otherwise wouldn't find it convenient or make it possible to be on one principal campus.
If we didn't have these centers out here, there'd be an entire group of students that it would just be so much harder for them to think about getting a college education. And so I feel like the work that we're doing out here is absolutely vital.
I've always wanted to teach, and I knew that WKU had such a great education program that I was able to connect, take all the classes that I needed to here, had the professors that really, really took an interest into what their students had and what they needed. And I think that over everything helped me succeed where I am today.
We have high standards, and we expect our students to perform to those standards. And of course, we'll provide the support that they need to meet those expectations and meet those standards.
I knew right away that I wanted to go to WKU because it is smaller. It's not your typical college atmosphere. It's more interactive. It's more personal. And I felt that I would get the best out of that. I simply walked through the door. I met my first advisor. I explained to him, this is what I want to do. I need to know how many classes. He sat down with me, showed me everything, and I made band. We were on the same page, and it was the perfect fit.
There is only one university. It's Western Kentucky University with 4 convenient locations.
So I think you probably saw some movie stars who were emotional this morning. I thank you again for coming to our location. If there's anything that we can do to make your stay here more comfortable, feel free to ask. And best wishes on a great evening.
Dr. Ellis, thank you for your hospitality and making us feel so welcome.
Thank you, Evelyn. What Evelyn did mention is our primary offices are just about a couple hundred yards from here in the main academic building on the ECTC campus, the campus that we share with the Kentucky Community Technical College System here locally. But what I want to do now is a kind of a bittersweet moment, but to make Justin come on up here. Annette and I have been partners for a long time, and she had the unenviable task of following Lois Gray as superintendent of schools in Carter County Schools. And those of you who know Lois, you know why I say that an unenviable task, because she was an incredible leader, educator, and chair of this Board of Regents. And not only have you filled those shoes admirably before you've taken the part amazing heights, and I'm serious about being a partner because Annette and I have worked very closely together for a long time. And when she called me 3 or 4 years ago now and said, I've got a vision of what I would like to do with Hardin County Schools, and I would like for WKU to be a partner with us in that endeavor. And so I got to take you back a little bit of time, because several years before that, we were working with a local foundation who gave us 20 acres of land, at which point we were contemplating expanding our WKU Elizabethtown programs in partnership with ECTC, and we had lots of plans, and then the state dynamics began to change as the recession hit, and the reality of doing something in the foreseeable future with this 20 acres of land that we're now in our possession, just there wasn't a plan that was going to unfold in any timely manner. And so Annette came to us with the vision for this EC3 facility, and she can perhaps explain a bit more about the EC3. But long story short, we deeded the 20 acres of land to Hardin County Schools to build this facility, which really crystallized that partnership. Now, Hardin County Schools invested a lot of money, and Annette got on her salesmanship hat and really went to work. But what a great vision it has been for the students of Hardin County Schools and for our WKU students that are enrolled here in Elizabethtown, Fort Knox. We invest a little bit of money in the classrooms and some technology that we are fortunate to be able to have access to here. But by and large, this was a Hardin County Schools investment in a unique type of education that takes place in this facility, and we are proud to be part of that vision for this facility. And now what you may not be aware of quite yet, depending on whether you read local papers or not, that Annette is retiring. Mm-hmm. After 33 years of service to Hardin County Schools, and one of the state's absolutely preeminent educators. And I don't mean just K through 12, and education in all of its forms. And so she is going to be seriously committed to the leadership of Hardin County Schools. But I know we will remain close, and that friendship will endure. And in that, I want to present to you a resolution from Western Kentucky University that I'm very proud to have the opportunity to present to you and say thank you for what you've meant to our university, to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and more importantly, to the students that you have brought through Hardin County Schools, many of which are now Hilltoppers or have been Hilltoppers.
We look forward to our tour.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Annette.
Thank you. We'll have the roll call. Secretary Harris.
Dr. Bale.
Here.
Dr. Birch.
Here.
Dr. Dennison.
Here.
Mr. Higdon.
Here.
Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Mr. Porter.
Here.
Mr. Ritchie.
Here.
Mr. Reedy. Ridley.
Here.
Dr. Smith.
Here.
Mr. Zilke.
Roll has been called. We definitely have a quorum and are official to conduct business. The next item is the approval of our October 23rd, 2015 minutes, which have been distributed to each of you. Any additions, corrections, or do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Phil Johnson, seconded by Philip Bale. Any other discussion? All in favor of approval, aye. Opposed, no. The minutes are approved unanimously. At this time, we will entertain a motion to go into executive session. Excuse me. Let me get one other housekeeping out of the way. We will be using the consent agenda today. This committee of the board met on December 11th and discussed each item on their respective agendas and approve submitting the agenda items to the full board for action, with the exception of finance budget number 5 item, which shall be discussed and voted on separately. So we will be using the consent agenda. With that being said, I return. We now need to move into closed session, and does one of the regents have the appropriate motion? Is that... If not, I will tender that motion, second, as soon as I can find my official document. Hang on momentarily.
Here you go.
At this time, I present to the board an opportunity for a motion that the board and President Ransdell go into closed session as provided in KRS 61-810 bracket 1 for a discussion related to the appointment and dismissal of individual employees. Motion by Regent Dennison, seconded by Ridley, John Ridley. Any other discussion? All in favor of approval to move into closed session for the stated purpose? Aye. Opposed? No. So approved. Entertain a motion for return to open session.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Vail, seconded by Regent Todd. Statement. The board has now returned to open session. The discussions and deliberations during the closed session were restricted to those stated in the motion, and no formal action was taken by the board in closed session. At this point, I would like to turn the meeting over to President Ransdell for a second.
Well, we'll get into the President's report in a moment, but before we begin the the content of the meeting, it's entirely appropriate that I go on and announce the reason for our executive session, which is that I have indicated to the board my plans for a transition to retirement, and that Julie and I have been giving this considerable thought for several months, and have outlined a timeline for the transition of the presidency of Western Kentucky University, and I will serve with full energy and focus for the next 17 months, but will complete my actual service in the presidency on June 30, 2017, and will then begin a six-month sabbatical from July 1 to December 31, 2017, at which time on December 31st, 2017, my employment with Western Kentucky University will be completed. Having said that, we will send out a news release promptly and a campus message that will also go out in a moment here, ensuring that our faculty and staff know that the pace will quicken considerably over the next 17 months. There is much to do. We have immediate challenges financially that have just received a bit more definition this week. But tough decisions need to be made, and I want to assure everyone that I am more than all in. And as I indicated to the board, I can take a nap summer of 17, but until then, we've got a lot to do, and I am absolutely focused on a long to-do list to be achieved over the next 17 months, and I look forward to working with our administrative council and our deans and other campus leaders to do just that. And I call upon everyone's support because, in my mind, there's now a deadline to get some things done, and I look forward to working with all of our faculty and staff and doing what's in the university's best interest for the next 17 months while this board engages in a critically important search process to find the 10th president of Western Kentucky University. And I pledge to all of you that my successor will find a university that is well positioned nationally and internationally, and I feel confident that my commitment to this Board of Regents in 1997 will be fulfilled in terms of leading a lasting transformation of WKU, and something that we can all, in which we can all take great pride. So I look forward to continuing to receive your support and your confidence. And while the board engages in a search, the board will trust me and our colleagues to achieve as much as we possibly can before June 30, 2017. So to those in the room that I have the opportunity to work with on a daily basis, thank you for your thoughts, support, energy, intellect,
And to those across our campus, I look forward to sharing this 17-month chapter with you as we complete what I think will be an important chapter in our university's history. So, thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's tempting to say some words respectful of our agenda and things that are timely that we need to proceed, but just one comment. That announcement obviously is bittersweet. With that being said, Mr. President, I'll ask you to give your report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll call on we have changed the agenda a bit from what was originally sent out with the events of this week. It was my determination that we probably should lead this meeting off with Vice President Robin Taylor's legislative report. A lot is in play in our state capital, and some of it is quite daunting. Robin is at work. She's heading in Frankfurt, and I'll be spending a lot of time there with her and her team over the next 60 days to try to make as much lemonade out of some tough lemons that we're dealing with. So, Robin, if you'll provide our legislative report, I'll follow up with a comment or two. Thank you.
Well, you all received the email that the person sent to the campus this week about the legislative reforms session beginning with the budget. And so I'm going to go through the highlights of the legislation. He included a 4.5% reduction in current year funding for universities. So the essence of that is we would need to cut 4.5% of our budget between now and he included a 9% reduction to the base, beginning with July 1, and then that would roll forward the next year. So we have basically flat funding. We lose 9% next year, and then it would flat fund the next year. He also, in the next year, which is the 17-18 fiscal year, has proposed a redistribution of 1/3 of the base of all post-secondary education. So all of university budgets, 1/3, equates to $282 million, would go into a pool that would be redistributed to institutions based on a yet-to-be-defined outcomes-based methodology. As you all know, the CPE and the presidents have worked together for the last 2 years to come up with a recommendation for a performance funding formula that would be applied to new money. This is a substantially different approach to that. One of the things that you all, again, are very much aware of that's been important to us and Northern Kentucky University has been an equity fund where we have been trying to capture funding for the growth and all the things that have occurred over the last 15 years or so that have created a situation where our per student funding is significantly below the average of the other institutions, the conference institutions in particular. The CPE did recommend that as part of the strategic investment funds that they requested in this budget, and the governor has opted in his proposal to fund that. We would get the first half of that, $5.3 million we get in the first year, and we get the full $5.3 million in the second year. Now, let me be clear, we would lose 9%, and we would get 2.5% back in the first year, and it's 2.5%, it's not percent. So it would basically bring the cut from 9% to, I believe, 5%, maybe 6%, and might need to correct those numbers.
And that is an important distinction. The perception is that we're getting something other campuses are not. This is not money we can go out and devote to something. It simply reduces the cut from $6.7 million to $4.1 million. Still pretty significant.
But the intent of asking for the equity fund was to, quote, level the playing field. I mean, our contention is that our students, if you look at higher share a portion and the state shares a portion, then what happens here as a result of the lack of funding and extraordinary growth over a long period of time has been that our students' costs is a bigger burden to utilize of their education than students who go to, say, Morehead or another institution.
Robin, would you just clarify once more? Is it $1.5 million?
Yes.
Over 2 years?
Yes.
No, no. It's two point six the first year and 2.6 the second year.
Twice.
Okay. Twice, yes. Total of $5.2 million.
Thank you.
And that money is there. I mean, it's not like we just get it becomes, well, in a perfect world it would have become recurring, Barbara, but in reality, when one third of the base goes back into being redistributed, then it just sort of adds into the total base.
But in terms of the 9%, it brings us down.
It reduces it.
It reduces it, yeah, for us, it does. Moving on, there were no capital projects or agency bond projects in this governor's proposal.
I'm sorry, Robin. I don't mean to interrupt you. J. Todd, take note. There were no agency bond projects approved in the governor's proposed budget. It remains to be seen what will happen in this legislative session, whether we can get our one agency bond project approved or not.
So the only two capital projects
parking structure
that we had asked for were the agency bond authority for the parking garage. There are some other things that were left out that Brian Russell and Ann and I have been looking through those. Just things that we generally ask for, like energy performance contract for one thing, energy savings. There were a number of things that were left out, and that happens every year. I think these were maybe more intentional based on what's been left out of every university budget. So we'll have some work to do to try to persuade folks to add those back in. There is a workforce development pool that he has proposed. It's a $100 million bond pool, and it would be intended for capital investments for workforce development, education, and training. That really is not well defined for us at this point. We don't know what our options would be for applying for that or how you would go about that. The intent, as he has stated, his intent is to basically redesign higher education's focus to being outcomes, workforce development centered. You can figure out a lot of that for yourself, but that's really what his intention is. And so in terms of outcomes-based funding, the beginning is to redistribute one-third of the base in the second year of this biennium. In the first year of the next biennium, so in 2019, redistribute two-thirds of the base, and by 2020, redistribute 100% of the base on outcomes measures. And all of those, again, in his proposal, would be centered around workforce development. So you can figure STEM plus healthcare degrees. None of those things have been defined, and none of those things have gelled yet at all. He has indicated he would be interested in dialogue with the presidents of institutions, CPE, in coming up with those, but right now his focus is on the budget. So that's the budget proposal, and I would like to remind all of you that this is the first step in a process. We have had a series of meetings with legislative leadership already. We have been on the phone, been in the halls, and will continue to do so. I can't predict anything that they will do at this point, but I can tell you that we have a 60-day session and a lot of work to do.
$3.1 million before June 30, $4.1 million July 1. Right, Ann? 3.5? Yeah, I'm sorry. $3.5 million before June 30 and $4.1 million July 1, yes.
Are there any questions on the budget aspect of that? Because I probably have answered all I can, all that we can on that. legislatively, we're tracking a number of pieces of legislation, a couple of them that I would that I've really mentioned here. One of them, several of you have asked me about, and that is Senate Bill 75, sponsored by Senator Dan Syme from Jefferson County, a tuition freeze bill. That Senate Bill 75 would freeze tuition rates where they are right now for 4 years, and then after that would move authorization or determination of tuition rates to the legislature. Currently, CPE approves tuition rates, so that would be a significantly different scenario if we were to move that tuition setting authority to the legislature. I can't project how that bill will go. I would say that there will be some folks that will look at it a little differently after the news we got on Tuesday evening. But obviously that bears watching, and talked with Senator Syme, met with a number of other senators, trying to have some open dialogue about the realities, I guess, that we face in higher education. Another bill that was passed last year in the House but did not pass the Senate requires some, pertains directly to the board, and that is board training. It would require the CPE to develop board training materials and ensure that you had certain things that you got in the first year and then you had additional training throughout the term as a board member. And that's sponsored by House Education Chairman Derek Graham, and so that bill is probably going to get a hearing next week or very soon after. And then we're tracking a couple of tuition waiver bills. Again, we're making our case, as we always do, that this is a good time for more unfunded mandates. And then the final thing actually was introduced this morning in the Senate by Senator Max Wise of Taylor County. And that is the what we call SARA legislation, State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement, which is very important for our distance education programs. Essentially, it would allow us to operate in any state. The state has to join this reciprocity agreement. It's a national agreement, and once the state joins, then institutions can join. We need that for our distance learning programs to be able to operate in the without extreme burdens and costs in other states. That's a fairly complicated issue. I'd be happy to elaborate more if you like, but we really look at that introduced today, and that's a piece of legislation that we'll be tracking very closely and trying to get passed as quickly as possible.
Let me try this until we come back.
Anything else on the legislative session?
What year, again, does the equity money kick in?
Of 16?
Yes.
We have half in the first year and the full amount in the second.
Well, if I could just make a slight correction on that. Okay. In the second year, the governor recommended $5 million plus or minus a little bit, I think, in equity funding. It went into the base fund and took one third of it and moved it into the performance outcomes based funding. Mm-hmm. So, in some regard, you could say $7 million of that amount is no longer really readily available on July 1 of 17 because it has to be in fiscal year 18.
The president's had a conference call with the governor yesterday morning, yeah, lots going on this week, and we meet next week, and then we meet again with the governor the week after next, and he's asked if we want to bring recommendations for things that would result in some legislative relief on policies, practices that may be hindering higher education, maybe to give us a bit more flexibility on some things. He's very private sector oriented, and so we'll put together a list of some things that might require some statutory authorization in order to provide some relief to higher education. Most of those are non-financial related, but we'll come up with a list. I just wanted you to be aware of that. But beyond that, we'll keep you posted as this legislative session unfolds, as the spring semester unfolds. Our work to achieve a $3.5 million budget reduction will be simultaneous with what takes place and as the budget goes through the House and then the Senate. And while we're hoping for some relief on what the governor's budget has proposed, the political realities are that we better go on and make some decisions, and because if we defer action until the end of April, it would be impossible to achieve the current year mandate. We only got 5 months right now, so lots to be done, and we'll just keep you posted on that. Just a couple things to point out that are completely unrelated to this, and I guess the news release must have gone out because I'm getting messages here from some of the other presidents.
You may want to turn that off.
Yeah, probably. Let me turn that over there. Rankings came out from U.S. News and News and World Report, ranking WKU third in the nation in best online programs in American higher education, exceeded only by Penn State and Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Florida. What a testament to our Division of Extended Learning and Outreach. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. The third best online programs in American higher education. And we have 20% of our enrollments are online, and a lot of students, and it's enabling a lot of students to access a WKU education. I mean, that's really remarkable, and I just don't want to underestimate that, and just make sure that our board record acknowledges what a tremendous job our faculty, and particularly our team and the Division of Extended Learning and Outreach are doing. You also have at your place a sheet that looks like this. It's WKU students by ethnicity. When Brian Meredith made his report at our last meeting, we talked about some things, and I don't remember who asked the questions, but some data was requested that allowed us to elaborate a bit more on our ethnicity across our student population. So you can see the numbers and the percentages in a five-year snapshot of the various categories, the various demographic categories of our student population. We're doing pretty well in holding our own with our African-American populations. This sheet looks like this. It's somewhere in front of you. We've had a slight decrease in black or African-American, but that's due to two things. One, the economy, the same variable that has affected our adult learner enrollments has also affected our minority enrollments to some extent. But we're also experiencing the phenomenon of more and more students are identifying with more than one race, two or more races, and that puts them in a slightly different context than being classified as black or African-American students. So the trends in our society continue to affect how some of these numbers are recorded. But the one item that gets my attention on this sheet is Hispanic. And the rather significant increase in our Hispanic population among our students now, with 3% of our enrollment, 594 Hispanic students, is something we need to take note of going forward. But anyway, I thought that would be helpful for you to receive, and we'd be glad to elaborate or capture any additional data that you might need or request. And given the time, I've got 11:28. We're scheduled to take a tour of this building at 11:30. Brian Russell, if we can do that, tour, break for lunch, and then come back right after lunch for your report on work order statistics that I think the board will have interest in. And we'll start our afternoon session as soon as we get back. Oh, Robin. Golly, I can't believe she didn't... The annual report for this past year is at your place, and Robin's team is, in fact, I think you just picked this up from the printer on the way out of town this morning, is here for you with our annual report for 2014-15, and my compliments to our public affairs team, but more importantly to all of our faculty and staff for the incredible amount of work that goes into the data and the actions and the outcomes that make up this annual report. So this will be circulated in the weeks ahead, but wanted you to have the first copies of our annual report for the past year. Are we on schedule? Julia, are we ready?
Right. All right.
All right.
If you all want to write, you can go to the restroom.